John Wayne Wright, beginning of the visit with Old Spears, this Saturday the 16th of February, 74. Channel 1 Wright, and the beginning of the visit with Old Spears, this Saturday the 16th of February, 74. Channel 1 Wright, and beginning of the very short visit in the kitchen with Old Spears, this Saturday the 16th of February, 74. Channel 1 Wright, and beginning the short visit with Old Spears in the kitchen this Saturday, the 14th of February, 74. Channel 1 Wright, and beginning the visit with Old Spears, a short visit in the kitchen this Saturday, the 14th of February, 74. Are you selling at the Rambler place?
I'm not selling cars. I'm working them cars.
What do you mean working them?
I've changed oil and grease cars and put on exhaust systems and things like that on cars.
Don't tell me.
Yeah. I didn't know you knew anything about cars.
Fixing to quit.
You're fixing to quit?
Uh-huh. I'm going back to Flag Lane. I want to sit down. I'm tired.
Yeah, sure. Well, let's get out of the wind. You're going back to Flag Lane?
I thought you were selling cars.
No.
Well, on that, but you told them when the gardening season.
Yeah, when I was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to plant my garden.
Does it light up there?
I quit. I do that on any job, Mr. Myers, that I go to. My garden has got to come first.
That makes sense.
I eat out of my garden. I grow my stuff, so I know how it is growed. I know I ain't eat no poison. I don't put no damn poison on my vegetables at all.
You don't.
No, ma'am. And so that's it. That's the reason why I eat out of my garden, because I don't like poison. I'll tell you now the reason why I don't like it. Now they say that poison won't hurt you. I left some insecticides, you know, that I mixed up in water, put two teaspoonfuls, which ain't very, very large, smaller than that,
in
a gallon of water, and I put it in my spray can, and I didn't use it all, and I left the spray can about a week, and it takes every damn bit of the enamel off it and put it rusting. Now, if it'll take the enamel off of anything, it'll take the enamel off on the inside of your belly, too.
I'll tell you something. It'll take the skin off your hide off your hand.
Yeah. And don't you believe that it won't do it?
Golly.
No, there's no two ways about that.
Now, you said the other day down at Fred's store that you knew I was healthy. That's the reason I keep my health. Because I'm darn particular about what I put in here.
Not about to put any.
No, ma'am. No poison goes in my belly. If it does, it goes. I don't want no hot water. If you fix me some coffee, I don't want none.
You don't drink it?
No, sir. Once a day. I drink about a half dozen cups for breakfast, and that's it. Now, if you got whiskey, sure. That's another thing I do. I drink liquor.
Early in the day?
Beg your pardon?
Early in the day?
A whiskey?
Uh-huh.
Anytime I get it.
Golly. What about a little wine?
I leave from here and I go to the bar. I buy me a pint of whiskey and I'll drink it today.
Pint?
Yeah. I just sip on it all day long. You'll never know. I go on with my work. Nobody never knows that I'm drinking. I just go sip on it, see. Take a little sip. I don't go pour a glass full and turn it up my head and drink it. Now once in a while I go by the car house, take a little sip. Go on.
Oh, I see. Until
I sip that pint up.
You don't turn it up and gargle it.
No, I don't gargle. don't take a bath in it. I don't think it hurts me. I don't never have a hangover. I never have a headache or nothing like that. I don't never get high. nothing. I just sip along on the liquor.
Well, people used to take it like that, you see, for medicine.
I ain't taking it for medicine. I take it because I like it. Just because I like to drink.
Well, it gives you a little lift, doesn't it?
And I drank it right there in my yard. I don't go to place. I don't bother nobody with it. Anybody comes in there, wants a beer or drink a liquor or anything like that, I got one.
You keep a little bit?
I keep a little bit. I got some bottles over there at the house. I paid $25 for quarts.
Oh.
But I bought them for the bottle. I got some beautiful bottles. I got a table at my house. I expect got $1,000 worth of bottles on it. You know, it's different.
Yeah, is that right?
Different kind of bottles, old bottles and things like that. I'm a bottle collector.
Yeah. Well, now this garden, there's a time to put it in.
Yes, ma'am. There's time to plant anything. If I tell you what, I haven't been doing, Ms. Myers. I haven't been putting down whenever I plant things. You see, so I'm going to do that from this on. It's time to plant peas, and I've done it 2 or 3 times, and not a worm, nothing get on them, not a bug, nothing, be just plumb perfect all the way through it. In other words, it'd be peas that you would read about, hard to ever in the world see, but you just read about them, you see. Well, I got to find out now what them days are, and then I'll find out when to plant them and things like that. Now, people tell you that ain't true, but it is true now, because if it hadn't, the worms would get on them. Them that I planted at that day and all like that, and they'll make a frost.
Let me tell you, who will tell you that it ain't true? People that ain't never set foot in a garden will tell you it ain't true.
There are people that Fred Woods over there, he's a good farmer and all like that, but he uses insecticides, a lot of it too. I know he's got the rigs on his tractor to put it out with. People that tell you that cigarettes will kill you, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that cigarettes ain't bitterly against you now. But that's on account of the insecticides they put on them. It ain't the tobacco. People used to. I'm 72 years old, going on 73, and I can remember whenever people smoked all the time. Nobody never got it. It never killed nobody then, and nothing like that. And they rolled their own cigarettes. Well, they didn't use insecticides then either, because they didn't have to. The bugs, they wasn't contaminated with bugs like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
But now they use it all the time. This poison tobacco. At least twice a month to keep the worms off.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they say that is on the leaf. That's true. But it goes back into the plant, too. Now, if you don't believe that, if you don't believe what I'm telling you, you take a plant and you go get liquid fertilizer. Don't put none on the ground at all. Just get you a little spray and spray it right on the leaf. Not quite a drip on the ground. And that plant will thrive. It will thrive tremendously. If it didn't go in the plant, where did it get the plant food from? If that fertilizer didn't go in the plant, where did it get the plant food from to make it grow?
Yeah.
So whenever you put insecticides on it, it'll do the same thing. Now you can go out there and you can take a bush that's got a hard root on it. A hard bark, cut it off, put it in a can, fill it full of sand, just dry sand, and wet it just a little bit on top. Get you a piece of plastic, put over the top of it, and tie it down there good and tight, and leave it alone. And that plant will take roots. Where'd it get the moisture from? That plastic will sweat and keep them leaves wet, and it'll go right down that stalk. And it'll make that hardwood take roots. And if you don't believe it, you try.
How you pick out your days? Say now, yesterday, day before, you planted corn.
Well, that is more of an experiment than anything else. I was planting my corn a day before yesterday on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted iced potatoes on the 14th, that's Valentine's Day, and I'll make iced potatoes. There'll be some bugs get on my plant. But my potatoes will done be made whenever they get there.
Oh.
They sure will. And I'm burning right now a log heap on my place to put my tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
I won't plant
them. That's more like it. Say, we used to do that.
I won't plant about 14 hills of tomatoes, and I'll make all the tomatoes that I want.
Well, you'd make enough for me, too.
Yeah, probably. because I'll put my six posts three on each side, nail my seat across it, and run my pieces across it, and let my vines grow up and
munch them.
When my vines get up about that high above the other one, or about that high, I'll go lay them and put my small cleats there. The top will keep the bottom shaded. They'll never blister.
I want to watch that done. I want to see that.
Well, I fertilize that. I get me a gallon bucket, punch me some holes in the bottom of it, go out in the pasture and pick me up a whole lot of cow chips and fill that bucket full of cow chips.
Yeah.
And then whenever I want to fertilize my tomatoes, I get me a cup, like about that much, fill my bucket full.
Mm-hmm.
Get me a cup, pour it, fill it full of water. Let it run on down through the cow chips, right on down to the roots of it.
Yeah.
I've never got no grass in it, no nothing. You see, all
the seeds, not there. You don't get the seeds.
Uh-uh.
And then your seeds come up then and they'll stay there next year.
The fire will kill all my grass seed that got in the ground now, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And kill all the germs and everything, so it won't do nothing, just make tomatoes and grow.
Yeah.
You got to put a little bit of lime up on top of the ground so it'll sweeten your tomato.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, it'll be so sour you can't eat it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
See? Let me tell you. This fella I introduced you to up there the other day.
George Myers?
He knows him.
Don't tell me.
Oh, yeah. Me and George used to work together. George cried character. He's worse than I. He's worse than you think I am.
I don't think I just need his way to me. Oh,
George, good old boy. I think a lot of him. He's mean whenever he gets to drinking.
Oh.
Now I'm right the other way. I'm funny whenever I get to drinking. I don't study to raise no rough eyes. I like everybody whenever I get to drinking.
Oh, really?
Well, now,
Ms. Myers, you've seen me down that Fred Woods when I was cockeyed drunk. I couldn't stay up hardly.
I sure didn't know that.
Nobody else.
And you drive a car?
Sir?
And just keep on driving the car?
Yes, sir. I drove my car from home, from Gainesville. Driving through Gainesville, all the way home. Driving my car house whenever I couldn't walk. Whenever I got there.
You know, that's hard to believe, my friend.
But you ask my wife. Maybe you'll believe her.
You didn't even scratch it going in
no,
the garage.
No, sir. I don't do that.
But now, old George.
He gets a little mean?
George gets pretty rough.
Oh.
Don't understand me saying now that he ain't a good man, because he
oh,
is.
No.
Oh, no, no.
He's a darn good fellow. I like him very much.
What was that? You told me something about George.
He's got a first-class engineer's license.
Yeah.
You know, he's a first-class engineer. He was once a merchant marine.
Oh.
And you have to have a good license to be a merchant marine.
Yeah. That's what he come here with.
Yeah. He come here. him and Willie Wilson was good buddies. And both of them was on merchant marine and found one another on merchant marine. They were both of them from
Boston,
Massachusetts. And they come here together. And went out to the University Heat and Power Plant and got him a job out there. And the both of them working together. And it's like George told Mr. Meyer, he started at the top and come down.
Worked his way down.
That's right. And instead of working, starting at the bottom and working up, like the biggest push people does, he started at the top and worked his way down. George knows that his drinking and hell raising is a cause of being where he's at. He knows that. He knows it very well. He ain't crazy. That man's got buku's of sense. But he just gonna booze a little bit.
Well, when he boozes, what does he do? What can you do around here?
You can raise a lot of hell in Gainesville.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
You don't know the nightlife in Gainesville.
No.
Boy, Boy, you get out to this on the outskirts of town and some of these jukes ain't got no windows in it, just one door. And you can raise a lot of cane in there.
And he's familiar around those places.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, one thing he told me, he used to come in on the ship over there at Jacksonville, and he'd buy him a little piece of land, and then out there at Navy base, air base.
Green Coast Springs?
Someplace there.
He had a little place out there at Melrose.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah. Had him a little trailer on it. He lost it somewhere or another. I don't know how he done it, but he never cries over spilt milk. Don't ever think he regrets anything.
They go in and get the coke and we'll go out there. I got one more little turn I wanna take other spear on.
He never
just keep seeing it.
No, I'm gonna I got to hurry back that brush heap. I don't want to burn my shanty down.
Well, let me tell you, why she's in there. That stomach thing. I've been thinking about that ever since, and I don't quite see how that works.
What's that? You walk up to him sometime. Tell him to hit you with his stomach.
Yeah.
He'll hit you.
Yeah.
Get that close thing.
And away you go.
Beg pardon?
And away you go.
There ain't no joke about that.
Well, where in the hell did he learn anything like that?
I just a gift from him, I reckon. Mr. Myers, I don't know.
Yeah.
I might be just telling you. Man, you got everything here. Speakers and everything else.
Yeah, well, I got these two old battered radios. Television set, neither one of them can hardly see them. I'm going to throw them away. I'm tired looking at them. I'm tired of the programs, and I'm tired that they wobble all the time. You got a good one over there.
No, mine ain't no good now. It's a cockeyed old, and the fine tuning is gone on it, and a technician says they can't get one, so I'm going to get the model number and all and write a RCA to build me one, because my radio is a nice box,
and it's
a nice radio.
Yeah,
it has been a splendid radio, and it's a good big screen.
Yeah,
and you get a beautiful picture whenever it's working, but it ain't working on the kind of fine tuning.
Yeah,
and we'll write them and ask them, are they available?
You know, I've been I didn't see old George. I didn't just saw him the last week in Moscow. He fishes.
Oh yeah, he fishes. George stick his hand in anything.
Well, I thought I'd tell him if he wanted to come out here and try to find a fishing hole, he could do it.
You know, George has got two girls back in Massachusetts.
No.
Both of them is grown, one of them married. And, one of them was down here for a long time. I don't know where she's married now, not I'd imagine she is. And I think her name is Clara. I think his baby daughter is named Clara.
Yeah.
They've been to my house several times.
Oh, have they?
Mm-hmm. Come down and have supper at night.
Yeah. Okay. I'm up to it. Let me get what I do in the jacket. Here it is. Say? Oh, I want you to go with me if you will.
Down went right around 200 or 300, and that's the end of this very nice and short visit with old Spears this Saturday, the 16th of February, 74. Down went right around 300, I guess, and the end of this short, very nice visit with Spears this Saturday morning, the 16th of February, 74. Channel 1 right around 300, and the end of this visit with old Spears, this very nice visit, short visit, this Saturday, this morning, the 16th of February, 74.
You don't know fog.
I don't love it.
No, I don't think they.
I don't
driving
mind, yeah.
Dangerous.
I love fog, but I don't want to drive in it.
Well, I've ridden in all kinds of weather all my life, mostly, and so I try to be cautious.
Yeah.
And if the weather isn't good and the fog is thick, I watch everything. The trouble is I can't see the signs.
No.
That's it.
I couldn't see the Evanston sign till I got right up to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I knew it was at the bottom of the hill that helped.
And then you get all foggy then, you can't clean your windshield.
You can't see. It was mean. And then the worst of it was, I didn't know it was that way, but I hadn't driven that early. But much of the run from Micanopy here, you go dead east in that blazing sun.
Yeah.
And from
yeah.
there you dump into the thickest fog.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
well, that's right.
That's
you know,
close here.
Yeah. You know, I used to think somehow that this road runs north and south.
Yeah.
But it runs kitty corners.
The sun straightens you out the early morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, well.
You didn't even have any freezing
In Gainesville? Well, there will be cold spots around Gainesville, but at my place it wasn't down to 36 even, about 37.
Oh, is that right?
But
soon
as I got to Payne's Prairie, what's the name of that little thing belongs to the university there
on the
lake?
Warburg.
Yeah, Warburg, and then that little place there that belongs to the university on the lake.
Yeah.
And I got there, it was frost, white everywhere.
Yeah? And that's the first good frost
that's
you get.
That's the first good frost. Then, in all the cold spots, you could see it. You come out of it on top of the hill, but when you get down, it'd be white again. So, it was colder than I anticipated this morning. I didn't think it'd get below 40, but it did.
I didn't either. Well, you know, last night we went out to the back pasture and going down this first little grade there in the lane,
yeah.
We started running into those cool spots. Now it was just a little air going across.
Were you out this morning? No, that was other morning.
That was last night.
Oh, was it last night?
About dark.
Mm-hmm. It was coming on.
Yeah.
It was getting cooler.
Yeah.
But not bad. But this morning I was surprised. I was up at 6 and it was only about 38 then, but the sun wasn't up, and before sun up then you have another chance for 2 more degrees down, and it probably was around 36 at my house. But it was around 32 in lots of places.
What was you doing up at 6?
Oh, you usually get up at that time. an old custom.
Six o'clock, it's so dark.
Dark as can be for a solid hour.
Yeah.
Can't even feed my flock of wild doves till 8 o'clock, but
yeah.
That's supposed to be 7, not 8, but the time has been set up.
Yeah.
And that makes it unnecessarily dark at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, I guess it's because I'm rubbing 84 that I haven't got much more time to do things in.
I don't know, Mr. Nealon. Sometimes I think that's the way it ought to be, but the people who've got so little time are the young.
Yes, that's right. They don't have...
They just haven't got time to fool with you.
No, I'm concerned about the young, but I could see it coming up 30 years ago more than that. One thing that has hurt this country badly was when the family-sized farm folded up.
It never... Nothing has been quite right ever since.
No, here's the trouble. I don't know. I'm not supposed to know. I'm not a qualified man anywhere, anyhow, or at the university, because my degrees are so poor.
But the small farm...
See, the thing that I say is this. The small farm can compete with the tractor-driven farm, and the big farm, 100 acres, 200 acres of this crop, 100 acres of that crop, where we used to have 10, 20 acres of a certain cash crop that we depended on most. Well, they started folding up. I used to tell the folks, that's not good for the country. Oh, well, it hasn't happened yet. When it happened, it's too late, so they folded up. The farm people were not fitted for work in the city. They got low-paying jobs.
Yeah.
The wife had to work to put the children on the street where they learned devilment. And so...
But you used to tell them that out in the country, what was going to happen.
Well, I told the country people, no use. They knew that things were against them, but our governmental people, our agriculturalists, are the ones I talked to about it as frequently as I could, but nobody gave me an ear. When I saw it coming more and more.
Mr. Nealon, nobody has got an ear.
No, they don't want to hear.
No, I mean, they don't have a hearing. Ain't anybody got a hearing?
Not me.
Even the birds who are up there, you see, they don't have a hearing. Ain't nobody listening to them.
No, I'm afraid that's right, too.
Now you...
But when the husband and wife then both had to work, that put the children on the street. Now, there's too much of that devilment. I was out at the garden center because I planted a goodly number of trees there, ornamental trees. And I knew that I had to replace some because they put a new road through there, the pavement, and they moved some of the trees I planted, and I wanted to take care of them and water them as dry as can be there. So I was out there pretty early, and we had some kind of meeting on that noontime there, something, you know, keep expenses up. We give certain organizations the privilege of, for a certain amount of money, to have their parties at the garden center. And so there was a lady there preparing for the people that were to come, and she pointed, one of our garden club members, and she pointed at the door and said that door was again buggered up, so we had to take it down and have it repaired, and it cost plenty. Before, the kids managed to break in, and they kicked the bottom boards out of the door, locked doors, you know, and vandalized the place. But this time they couldn't get in, but they buggered up the lock so that you couldn't, your keys wouldn't work anymore. So she's explaining her trouble. That's just one little instance. The kids roam around at night till 4 in the morning, I guess, and then they sleep during the day. Teenagers, and then vandalizing, that's the thing. Isn't that a terrible condition?
It is indeed.
Well, now look here, I talk too much.
Well, Mr. Nealon, those fellows over there that have got that big education, they don't have any more hearing than you have, and you say you have. Now you take your friend over there, Frazier?
Yeah, Percy Warner Frazier. He's my friend.
Well, nobody listens to him any more than they do
to
you.
But the school, I've noticed this, is my former assistant, I hired him, Tony Jensen, assistant extension forester. A good boy, well-meaning boy, honest, but he doesn't have push and drive. So I couldn't recommend him to replace me because he just doesn't have, he works all right, but then he doesn't promote, that's the thing. And if you don't promote what you're in, you're not in public service. Now you're with students and university people, 90% I guess are supposed to be. But in extension, you're supposed to be broad for the whole state.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't recommend him. Then they put this fellow Tom Herndon in there. It hadn't been for a faithful secretary who saved some things. Everything in my desk had my name on it into the waste paper basket. But she saved some 30 letters from people from here to North Carolina, important people, about my multiple use program. And those letters said, mostly like this, your program should be adopted throughout the South. And that all went in the waste paper basket. But this secretary saw what was happening and she rescued them. But the trouble is with people, foresters, they will not admit, there are exceptions, they will not admit that any forester was ever wrong. That's professional stick to it. I say if it's wrong, if the President of the United States says it's right, I'll still say it's wrong till I'm convinced. But that's not the way they are. So the clear cutting on our forest, the national forest, where the soil runs down the hill and no more salmon in the river, soil gullied all over because it's profitable for the timber people to cut clear, more profitable. So since the U.S. Forest Service says it's all right, they're bought off through the Congress. So, with any in a country like that, how can honesty prevail?
Mr. Nealon, I would tell you, you know the Sierra Club.
Yes, I don't.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah.
Minute. Let me talk to you a minute. Now they have the kind of people who can see and write. To a point.
Right. Anything they stand
but,
for.
And what they say is informed. It's well informed. They are better informed than the other people.
Basically.
Now, if we could get hold of one of those Sierra Club writers, and you talk to them the way you talk to me, you see, what I found was, when I was working with these young people, on the all that material that we had about you and Ms. Nealon, I found that we couldn't use any of it. One little touch of that would contaminate the whole damn thing. I mean, it's not funny.
It's terrible.
I mean to say, we could not touch it. we couldn't put in one little touch of it. We tried it. We did it many ways. When Rick went out there with you to the forest, he
yeah.
put in just what you said.
Yes, he did.
And then we had to work on it. I say, Rick, that don't sound right. And he went back over and kept looking at it. And he's the one who said it. I didn't say it.
No,
he
I
said,
understand
he
that.
He said, all these things like this just will not go. And what occurs to me now, and I have felt that, I felt that at the time,
mm-hmm.
but that will take a different kind of person. That will take one of those Sierra Club fellas. And I would be willing to look around and see if we could find one. You see what they can do, Mr. Nealon. They've got enough information, they're scientific enough, to understand what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
They know a lot of the personalities that you talk about.
Oh, they do.
And I don't know any of them. And they could write up in 3 or 4 pages some of those incidents, like Herndon coming in, you see,
yeah.
and cleaning
yeah.
out your office.
Yeah. Condemning everything.
Yes. They could do that, Mr.
Because
Neal.
He says so, though. The rest takes so. They stick together.
Oh, they stick together.
But the trouble is, he got the job because
yeah.
he was to get a doctorate, but he didn't.
Let me tell you, I got something here I want to read you. Now, this is from a new book on President Truman.
Oh.
And what happened was, back in the early 60s, these people thought they would go out and use television, you see, have a television series, make a television series, and get him to say from day to day what it was like to be president.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they didn't know what they'd get into. For one thing, they didn't know President Truman. And the way he turned out...
Told the truth.
Yes. He was a bird, and furthermore, he didn't watch his language.
No, I remember that. The common
well,
man, I say.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. Yes, that's right. Well,
you'd like
it. Now, let me show you what he did. These fellas come up out there, and he'd never seen them before. In my case, he had taken the trouble to read 2 of my novels. And I'm sure they weren't his kind of book. And Truman was a great reader.
Yeah.
So it was a measure of his forbearance that he was willing to let me handle the series. And you see, he was going to determine what all went in it.
Yeah.
And Truman said, you'll never find me in any way criticizing or jumping on the people who are trying to help me. Now that's something. If a fella can't be patient and considerate of the people who are actually doing the work for him, then he's not any good, and I'm not for him.
I agree.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Nealon, I never realized it. Now, you see, I'm a bookish man, and still I had never realized that Mr. Truman had absolutely no voice, he had no say whatsoever in what they did with that material. Now, there was all sorts of material there,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of it, see, ought to have been cut out.
Yeah.
But he had absolutely no say. Now, I'll tell you, if anybody writes a little piece on you, I can see, from your point of view, they gonna please everybody except you.
I'll go with them on that, too.
Well, now let me tell you.
To a certain extent, but that bothers me.
Yeah, but ain't that something? But that's what you get into.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Well, I never tell you. Nobody's been writing on me.
Well,
but
it is.
My little niece, she came down here and studied with me at one time. And every now and then she tried to write about her experiences down here with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to write her back, and I'd say to her, you see, you know, nobody gonna recognize me from what you said. In other words, she wasn't quite...
I understand what you're after. You want the personality in it.
She wasn't quite up to it, you see. Some of my statements and all like that, it kind of sound like me warmed over.
Well, that's true.
Well, you got, look at that. Look at all these big shots, all the people that people write books about.
Yeah.
Well, don't you know those people? Don't you know the people, if they're still living, they flinch just to think about what people write about.
I'm sure you're right. But what bothers Wes and me, we are people that don't care a hoot about recognition. The only thing that makes me mad is when I'm treated with contempt and when I'm right, and that I won't take.
Well, now the thing of it is, you see, you and your wife are the ones who deserve the recognition.
Yes, but wife is worse than I am. She doesn't want recognition. She just thinks that's putting on.
Yeah.
But she's worked harder than I have in public service,
public
service.
Yeah. And didn't get anything for it.
Never. She doesn't want anything.
Well, Mr. Nealon, of all the people that we know, we found you and Mrs. Nealon more worthy of, and they spent a lot of time.
Well,
and
that's frightening.
We all found you and Mrs. Nealon more worthy of looking at.
I hope not. I couldn't take that. But there's this thing about it. We are both. We don't like to be featured,
right.
But we have to be. I guess in your case, and one thing we are going along with you in every way we can, because you have you're making an honest effort, and I support honest effort. We'll go along, but talking about Rick's visit to the woods there, I have to do a lot of editing on that because some things are not factual.
Oh, really?
And then, you know, that's another thing that bothers me. In my nearly 60 years of public service with country people, I have the country people lingo, and I don't speak good English, they would not understand me. So I use too much of that, and when I'm quoted, it sounds good.
Let me tell you. Now I'm running into that, and you see, I like the country language better than the other.
Yeah, I guess I do too.
I think that could be put in a note.
And let me tell you what, that thing you did on the West. Some of that language in there, it's as fine as I ever heard anywhere. And it's just straight, it ain't exactly country language, Mr. Nealon, but there's a lot of what you might call grammatical errors.
Oh, yes. I have adopted them.
And Mr. Truman's too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's common talk.
And let me tell you what I've,
that's right, he does.
I just heard this term a little while ago, that you have to be bilingual.
Well,
when you speak that old country talk, you see, it won't pass muster at the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, that's right. And with the university people particularly, that was a low ratio with them. But I don't care about that. They low rated me all my life.
It's just that you can speak two languages.
Yes,
and
I met a German, he's with the university, I don't know whether you know him or not. German word for it is bumblebee, means bumblebee. Hummel. A Hummel is a bumblebee in German. Hummel. Well, I said, is it still true that in Europe you are not considered educated unless you know two languages? He says, now it's three. And so, you know, out there, they are ahead of us in many ways and all that. A longer civilization, or not, that isn't a word, but it's a longer way on the way up. And we're a newer nation, and we don't consider, we've had to fight all the time until now, until maybe the last 40, 50 years. Maybe 100 years, but they've been at it 600 years, so they're ahead of us in many ways, especially in forestry. But it is, as you say, necessary often. What French I knew or didn't know, what I learned during World War One, I got so I could read a French book. Now I've forgotten most of it. But every once in a while, when the word comes up, the French word, I still recognize the meaning of it. And so I think it's necessary for us to know more than one language as the world goes on and on and on. Now, it wasn't necessary 50 years ago as it is today.
Listen, Neil, I don't know how this would get, how you make a point of this. But you see, you are so much broader than about 9/10 of them fellas up there now. You see, your whole attitude about going to the army, it's, you see, that belongs to a world that's completely gone.
Oh, yes, that's
you see, your attitude towards it, you see, you didn't want to be a 6-week wonder.
No, I said, what would I know about Navy?
But all them fellas would be a 6-week wonder.
Yeah,
I mean, it's never
that
been
time.
Enjoyed.
And you know what I've noticed? A few of the people that were in camp, in training camp with me, would do nothing but study to get their first lowest degree.
Yeah.
And the older toughies in the Navy, they looked down on them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that. I could do, I was on a guns crew.
You know, it makes it much stronger to me, Mr. Nealon, that you can speak the language of the countryside, or the language of the North Woods, and also speak the language of the Chamber of Commerce. This is the thing that, you know, this young girl, Debbie, she speaks such correct English.
Yes.
She can't switch and talk to the people out here in the country.
No, my wife noticed that.
Though she could go to France and study French,
yeah,
she still didn't recognize that this was another language, too.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Rick was conscious of that, and he was proud of the force of your language.
Yeah, he liked it.
So
he,
that
he
could be
it.
Who
Rick,
was
Rick was.
Oh,
he appreciated
yeah
the force of your language.
Oh,
that
yeah
could be put in a footnote, you see.
Yeah.
Well,
yes,
yeah, the thing that embarrasses us both with the work, we're happy to do it if it helps the students. That was one of the main things we like to cooperate with, because it helps the young people a little broader view and get them started too. You don't learn everything in 4 years in college. You need to know by any means, or 6 or 8. But anyway, Debbie, the material was a better, a good deal than Rick. And in many ways, wife is pretty critical herself, and the main thing that bothers her is all that praise. She just not used to that. But if others say so, I guess we can't complain.
Well, now, you see, Debbie has great, great, great facility with the language.
Mm-hmm.
And she can hear what you say, too, Mr. Neal.
Mm-hmm. She's broad there.
She just got the gift.
Oh, yes, it is a gift.
Oh, she has a gift. It's just a gift of language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got a gift of language, spoken language, but now what I mean by your written language, see, you can sit down and write it out, but you just frame it. You're not actually writing, you're framing it. You're just writing a sentence at a time.
Yeah, that's right.
You see, she can write the whole damn thing just
yes,
she can write, you know how long it takes her to write one of those pieces on Ms. Nealon? About an hour.
You know, she has a gift. That would take me 12 hours if I ever got through
yes
it then.
But more she can see, and she's honest.
She's fine.
Honest.
Yeah, well,
and
that's worth a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. That's what we need today so much.
Yeah.
Four square.
Yeah.
But in the school of forestry, there are two people there that want to recognize me and do in a whisper, but they don't dare to say it loud because the rest might hear.
Yeah.
So they are subdued.
Mr. Nealon, you know, I don't believe you recognize how damned uncomfortable it is for everybody over there now. Even them fellas that are, you might say, in the driver's seat, they live an awful life.
In what driver's seat is that?
Well, any driver's seat, over there on the campus.
Oh, on the campus. Oh, you're right. Mm.
All of them.
Mm.
All of them.
Administrative work is terrible.
Well, they all live a sort of a frantic life.
Yeah.
And they are as uncertain of themselves as a,
that's right,
you can imagine.
That's right.
They're hardly responsible. And they gotta praise people. They gotta watch out even who they praise, Mr. Nealon.
Yes, that's right. Or it offend those that they need the influence,
yeah,
of and the help of.
Oh,
isn't it a terrible world?
It's a crazy world, Mr. Nealon.
A crazy world.
To shoot straight at the mark,
yeah,
is wrong,
yeah,
now.
Yes.
Now, Lucille Little, is she like the one with you out there in the field? She said it sounded like you.
Oh, you mean the one you wrote up?
I did a little of it. Ricky wrote it, most of it.
Did she? Did Rick, he?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought it was largely, isn't it under your heading?
Well, it's under both of us.
Oh, I see.
But he had the general idea, and he put in most of it. But I had to go back over it and touch it up.
Well, that's all right, but what bothers the wife more even than what bothers me is this supposed to be made available to the world, so to speak? That we are people that are not accustomed to praise.
No, I know it.
But, you know, it takes time. And Flagler County is county agent. I was fired fortnightly almost because I wasn't with the ruling element, and the ruling element there was crooked.
Yeah.
And the banker was the biggest crook of all, and he said, he doesn't play ball.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't join his crookedness. See, if you don't do that, then you're on the outside and you're dangerous.
Yeah.
And in a smaller way, in a less crooked way, but still crooked, is our political system, our educational system. You don't dare to say what's right because you might hurt someone else that isn't right.
That's right.
So it's a difficult world, as you say. It's a crazy.
It's a crazy world.
But anyway, I didn't want to take too much of your time. The thing that we both appreciate so much is what you folks are trying to do and trying to get across. And we would like to cooperate, and we will in so far as is possible. But wife is so afraid it might get out into the public hands.
Well, that's what we wanted to do.
Well, I didn't tell her that. I suspected it. I didn't want
to. We'd like to put it in a great big book. Put it out.
All right.
Mr. Nealon, I took a great liking to your friend there in the first chapter. What's his name? Who wrote about you?
Oh, Dr. Glass. That amazed me. I'd long since forgotten that. But when it came out, I said, my goodness, that man must have studied me closely to get all the details that he knew about me.
Yeah.
Where did he get it at all? I didn't tell him.
Is that right?
No, I didn't have anything to do with it. When it came out, I was, wife and I were both shocked.
Well, where did it come out?
It was subdued here at the university.
Oh.
because, you know, he's not a qualified man. He has no education, and he has no degree, and that's a serious thing at a university. What was Ben Franklin's entire schooling? 2 years.
Oh, Truman just got through high school.
Well, there you are. You
oh,
have
I think
to know
we can forget about that.
In forestry, you have to know more than in a book. But the trouble in forestry is that if you're not a forestry graduate, at least with a bachelor's degree, you are nobody, and they will not admit it. And so they block an important project because of that. So that's what you're up against if you come out with something new. Well, one old philosopher said it nearly 100 years ago. Every new idea, he said, if it's a good one, must go through 3 stages. First, it's called nonsense, worthless, by the top people, not the common man. Well, the idea lives on somehow, and after 10 or 15 years, well, true but unimportant. That's what this old philosopher said. Then it still lives on, and it catches on. Now, the very people who condemned it to begin with say, now, we have something important to offer you. And that's in us today, just as it was 100 years ago. So we have that to combat, but it's a hard struggle to get across something that people resist and resent, and their reputations at stake.
Mr. Neeland, their guy's voice, he has a little voice on the campus, but it goes through that same problem that you do. And a few of his friends will say he's visionary.
Yeah, that's one way out.
Yeah. And
can't you prove him wrong?
Yeah. And you see, you're a visionary.
Yeah,
you see, and one of these days.
Well, without vision, the people perish. That's another old saying.
When did you know Gratz first, Mr. Neeland?
Oh,
back in Miami County?
Yes, it was one time. Another pathologist, the poor man, he was down in the Palm Beach area, and he got in a car wreck and was killed. He was a pathologist, and he and Dr. Gratz came through. They were looking up some work at Hastings, where the potato co-op was organized. And they heard that I was also organizing one, and did, and ran it for 3 years successfully. What a battle. Because everybody isn't honest, and if you steal in the co-op, you're stealing from your neighbor. That won't do. Well, they came through, and I had just been fired, as usual, but I was still continuing my co-op because that wasn't related to the county. That was at my expense. I did everything without charge. And so they were looking into what I was doing, and that's where I was first acquainted with Dr. Gratz and his companion.
And
came through.
Is he a pathologist?
What was Dr. Gratz now? I forget everything. It just bothers me.
But it seems like he was located at Hastings for a while.
Yes, he was in agricultural work. But just what it was, there's so many of them now that I can't remember who did this and who did that. 20, 30 years ago, and that gets me down. But anyway, he was an agricultural worker. Whether it was pathology, I don't think it was far from pathology, but I can find out. But anyway, I didn't know that he knew anything about me.
You didn't?
No, I had no idea. When it came out, I said, my goodness, there's somebody who recognizes me.
That was just about 10 years ago.
Yeah, something like that.
Back in the 60s.
8 and 10 years, something like that. But I had completely forgotten it. You know, we stay so busy with things that we do that need to be done today. That's the reason we're so late in going through this. That finding time belong to the World War One veterans. That's one thing, the people are old and feeble and they're in the hospital and nobody calls on them. And their buddies forget them, and I'm one of them that forgets them, because I don't have the time. Then the other thing that keep us both in high gear all the time, for instance, all my old associates at the university have died, almost all of them, and left their widows, and they're lonesome and they're lonely and they're forgotten. So wife and I, we try to help them and get them to church so they'll meet some of their people, things like that. We take too much time with others, and then we leave just as many we can't get to. So you have to draw the line somewhere.
That doesn't leave you much time to feed your dogs.
No, I feed them. Dogs are pretty cute, you know. The pigeons would eat it all up, the town pigeons, and I'm not buying feed for town pigeons. But the doves come before they can really see, and the pigeons come up later, so the doves are all through eating before the pigeons come. Well,
that first little thing, preface if you want to call it, I did that, and my comment on you, you see, is that you're mean.
Well, I guess I am.
But that doesn't cast through the rest of it until it gets to the end. Now, Mr. Nealon, that business about you in the West, that's some of the most beautiful stuff I've heard. Now,
I can't understand.
I worked it out. Well, now it's a difference in taste, you see. And that's where you are sort of at the mercy of whoever cares the ball. They're going to do it according to their lights for other people according to their lights, and they're going to leave you.
Well,
now, I've already had that experience. I've seen that work before, and I don't know, it requires a great deal of patience and tolerance,
yes,
I think, on your part.
Yes, it does. Well,
but now, to me, that is one of the most informative things I have ever got into.
I think it's just beautiful. All of that part about the West, you and the West.
I've forgotten. I forget everything now.
Well, I gave you that a long time ago.
What?
All of your experiences in the West.
Oh, yes. Well,
in the Lumbo camps and all and everywhere.
Yeah.
I was out there last April. And walked the old footpath, and I remember a rhyme as long as 80 years. I don't try to, it just sticks. And as I was walking one of those dim paths over the hills, and on the 3-mile trip we kids made to school, still wilderness then. And step by step more holy grew each spot where he had trod. I'm sympathetic with the outdoors and with the things that used to be, the birds and the grass and the wildflowers, the pansies on the hillside, the larkspurs and the tulips on the hill and in the vale, the buttercups, things like that. Now, I like to live that because that's what I did. We had no books when we were young, and there were no books written.
Yes.
On the outdoors.
Let me tell you, in that little piece on the West, Mr. Nealon, that last February, when we were got into that, it's been a year.
Mm-hmm.
God Almighty, it's been a year.
Mm-hmm.
We sat right here, the 10th of February. That's that cold day when you got stuck.
Oh, yes.
Now, that's the heart of it. That's one of the nicest things I've ever had. Oh, it is.
Nice.
You see,
Mr.
Nealon,
the young people, they don't know anybody who brings back things from their childhood and plants them in the yard like you did. They don't know anybody who walks the trots the paths of their childhood.
No.
You see, it does something to make them see you.
Now, there's more in that than you know about yourself. You say you were without books, but you got into the Navy through the in influence of a book.
Yes, I did.
And you also, you never would account for the fact that you were out there by yourself and you still got into the wildlife. Well, you see, I went from this hunch that I have seen all the countryside and none of them care one damn hoot about wildlife.
No, that's right.
So
foresters either.
You had to get it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only place you could get it, according to this little inquiry, and you see, my method is better than yours. My inquiry is better than yours on this, but you did it yourself. The closest thing we could get was that little old bird book that you had and the teacher had in the closet in that little old school you went to.
I would.
Now, that's as close as we could get, and that's closer than you ever got.
You know, I still remember that. When my classwork was all done, we were given privileges. We had a library up there in the corner with books. And every time I got permission to take 10, 15 minutes in the library, I hunted up a book on the mockingbird of the South and things like that, because I was interested in the outer doors. Trees and the outer doors are my whole interest. And let's preserve them, but if I say that to a forester, he's cracking the head.
I'll tell you, nobody would look at Guy or me and try to see what we were like they've looked at you, because it's really a compliment.
Well, it's not that. If I talk about what I did when I was 18 years old, nobody would listen to it. You see, you can talk about it, and it's worth listening to. But let me tell you, Mr. Nealon, now here's something that is a part of it. Suddenly you cut off. You can talk about your record up through World War I, and that's the end. After that, you're pushing programs.
Yeah, I guess that's right, as in public work.
Yeah. And you don't have much else to listen to. It's just programs after that.
Yes, well, it's new things that I try to get across.
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's something else. Hell, you can read all that other stuff. Everybody is getting across new things. But you see, that stuff that you related up through World War I, Mr. Nealon, the rest of them can't touch.
You think it's important?
I think it's one of the richest things I've ever seen.
It's you, Mr. Nealon. It's you as a person.
Well,
now pushing your programs, that's
anybody can push a program.
I mean, that's important, I know. But you see, we see you as a person,
yeah.
The kind of person that other people.
Well, it's not you as a person. It's the quality of life.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try.
And since World War I, you haven't had much quality.
No, none at
You've
all.
You've just been a dog
running
on the track. You've been in the rut just like everybody else.
No, they say I'm always promoting something new. And that's what condemns me.
Well, it's because of all this light that you had when you were coming along.
Yeah.
It
all helped.
Yeah, you see, what I'd like to do is the same thing we did for you in the West. I'd like to do along, like when you were a forester, extension forester.
Yeah.
But you don't give me any information on that.
Well, I don't remember anything important.
You don't tell me any of the people you worked with, you see?
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you, you and one of those bastards got out there in the car and just cut monkey shine.
Didn't do anything productive.
You were doing things productive, but you also cut monkey shine. You see, you'd go like some old Dutchman and tell all them funny stories?
Well,
that's what he said you did in that letter, Mr.
Who did that? Said that, Jock?
No.
Oh.
No, it's one of those fellas that wrote you a letter on your retirement.
Oh, I see, yeah. Well.
But you see, you never would cut any monkey signs. You wouldn't go into any of that.
Mm.
It's always pushing a program.
Yeah.
Well, we can't write a chapter on pushing programs.
No.
All you can do is just say you did it.
I thought of one thing. I've been thinking and trying to think of what you said you wanted me to tell. So I finally said, well, here's a story from the back country. I was out, maybe I told you already, I was out in West Florida digging some trees, mostly to experiment and see if they'll succeed on this saw and on that saw. And I got very thirsty, and I stopped at a new little store. It wasn't a store hardly, just a place you get cold drinks. I needed a Coke. As I walked in, they'd made a new fill, a new dirt, over the ditch approaching here, this little store. Oh, I said, there's a fella got some Coke out in the country. And so I crossed over, and I kind of looked where I'm going, just naturally, and there was an Indian arrowhead, not a bad looking one. They dug that dirt up in the woods somewhere, and the rains, it had been a pounding rain the day before, washed it out of the clay so that it showed up. So I picked it up, and I went into the man that ran the thing. I said, I picked this up in front of your store. Do you want it? Try to keep on it. And he looked at it, and he said, no, I don't want it. And an old timer from the backwoods is sitting there, and he looked at it from a distance, not a far distance, and he said, that air has thunderbolts. And he said, you know, we have these pounding rains, and they come down from the sky. I said, oh, that's how it happened. I was not going to disagree with him.
No.
I wouldn't do that air of thunderbolt. That arrowhead is a thunderbolt.
And you didn't disagree?
And no.
Yes, Mr. Nealon, I have found nobody yet who reports on the, what do you call them? On the backwoods.
On the what?
Backwoods.
Backwoods.
I have found no one yet. I have found no one. Of course, I haven't looked very extensively.
Mm-hmm.
No one who reports on the backwoods. There's nothing on it.
Well, I could be. Yes, there is something on it. I remember in the backwoods days in Flagler County there, that was a very new county, and the old timers all had cattle in the woods and wild hogs in the woods. And cholera got in there, and it spread out even to their range hogs. They didn't feed those hogs. They got fat when the acorn crop was out in the fall. This is a good acorn year. Otherwise, they were half starved most of the year. But they were lean and wild tusks. Oh boy, they stood out like that on the old board. Well, they trapped them down by the swamp in a new rail pen high, so they couldn't get over. And then I had to get in there and vaccinate them. And we had one that was specially mean. He just charged everything. We finally tried to get a rope around his head, a lasso or a loop. And the first thing he did was grabbed it with his teeth. And he gave it a jerk, and that settled his lower jaw around his tusk. And a hog is like that. If you catch him by the head or a dog gets him by the ear, he doesn't do anything but pull back. That's all he does. So then I could do, while the young man was holding the rope, I went in there and inoculated him in the front end and in the posterior with the two different kinds of serum that's necessary. One gives him the collar, the other negates it, so to speak, the collar. And so now then the problem was how to get that rope off of him and get out of there. So that was the young fellow's problem, who owned the hog, and his dad owned the hog in the woods. And so we struggled there quite a while, and we finally got the rope loose enough, so we decided now it's in the position he could, he decided that he could give it a jerk and get the new rope I had with me off of him and over the top in time to get away from those tusks. But he was barely in time. I was outside watching that board just sword up through his flank and made it pass at him, and he didn't meet the, miss the seat of his pants a half an inch, I don't think. So that's some country life in the old timers. That's the way they did. But there's other things that I didn't like out there. They paid me so little, the wife put me up a thermos bottle and some sandwiches for my lunch, and I often stopped in the woods on my way from one farm to another, because I had no office. I was supposed to patrol the county all day. $60 a month from the county, $60 from state and federal, buy a car and run it all day at your expense. Well, I'd stop in the woods somewhere to eat my lunch, and one day there's a hammock there, hardwood hammock, and I heard the most agonizing bellow. I said, my goodness, what can be wrong back there in the woods? Couldn't see this far back. So I got out of the car, and during the winter time, this was winter, on February, the range hadn't recovered, and the cattle were so thin, and many died, seeing lying in the ditches. And this poor cow was down and couldn't get up again, and the buzzards were eating on her fore and aft, had both eyes picked out, pulled out, and the animal was tossing his head and roaring. Never will forget that horrible noise, the bellow that she made, being eaten up alive. So I got me a club and slayed the poor critter. But those things went on in the early days. They expected to lose 20% of their herd. It didn't cost them anything. They just naturally bred on the range.
Well, now, by the backwoods, I mean the people.
Yeah, the backwoods.
Now, here you've got the hog and the cow.
People may have lived in Crescent City or way down somewhere that owned the place. Some of them were local, some of them were in the adjoining counties, but the cattle range, there were no fences, it was all open range.
You know, this is, we got enough, Mr. Nealon. We got great plenty. We don't have to work anymore. But now that's two things. You see, the people themselves, the common people, the people on, you're talking about the family farm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I could just see some of the people on those family farms.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it from nobody. And now this is different. The county agents that you worked with, the county agents, in my estimation, were a fine breed of men.
Well, they had deteriorated.
Yes,
too.
Yes, I know.
But they were better.
Yeah.
In early days.
Yeah.
But
they had stamina, Mr. Nealon. If you could just sort of look at some of them that you knocked around with, transact the business. Now I'm not suggesting that you do it, but I mean, you see, you got
those. You want more background?
Well, you got those two groups of people that are not covered anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. And that should be. You're right. That picture should show.
Yeah.
I'm a county agent himself.
Yeah.
Some county agents, and
what
also
talking around with.
So that people to come would know what the county agent was like in his best days.
Yeah.
And in order to say something about that, you have to bring one of those people to life.
Well, doesn't that early extension yesterday bring out some of the problems? That is all new.
Yeah. Now you see what we did that February morning in here when you were relating what happened to you in the West?
I didn't remember that I related much on the West.
That was the first time.
Huh?
That was the first time.
The first time I said anything about the West?
I gave you a transcript of it with my interpretations of it.
Yeah, but I didn't remember. You said you wanted to something on Florida like that.
Well, I mean, that would be something to go by. You see, that's all circumstantial. You eat oats, and you had a ladle and the things to get it out with.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All sorts of small things. You
yeah.
see,
yeah.
you go along and you talk about it, and you don't know what's important and what's not important. You just put it in.
You realize what happened.
As it comes to your mind. And sooner or later you see something happen. And you don't direct it, you just let it come to your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I
probably
don't think...
now I forget.
No, it's not that. You didn't forget that.
Well, certain things I do, but the important things I don't remember.
Now you see, let me tell you, Mr. O'Neill, from what we've done on that, I've got that in mind now. And if we had a shot at it sometime, you see, and you had an audience, you saw it, you wouldn't just have to talk to me. I could work along with you, and we could get something twice that good. Because, you see, I've got something to go by.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, for one thing about your haymaking, you with that custom hay
yes,
outfit.
Traveling
well,
the whole valley.
Yeah. You see, what you did mostly on that was just tell me how you made hay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not worth much. And you see, if in other words, it's a process. If somebody tell you how to make moonshine. Well, anybody can tell you how to make moonshine. But you see, once we get past that, we get into interesting things about what you did out there making hay. And you see, now here's the thing I've found. I don't have to know what it is you did. You don't have to know what it is you did. We just get into it and just see what comes out. But now let me tell you, I'm satisfied. You've got some of the finest patches in that other thing there. One of them, you see, is going up that mountain, coming down the mountain on that team of horses, with 16 horses.
Oh, yeah, and
that's
20.
Yeah, that's a beautiful glimpse. I mean, that is beautiful. And then you've got the that thing on the battleship, you see, in the Navy.
Yeah.
Where you're sounding off and the captain overheard you.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then you've got but I think the finest thing about the Navy is that you didn't want to be a 6-week wonder.
No,
you wanted to see what it was about.
You know, I took out my diary on that by accident. I was rummaging around for some old records in my desk.
Yeah.
And I kept a daily diary on a little book.
Yeah.
The thing got so rough there that I finally lost it, and one of the boys picked it up floating around on the deck in ice water, of course, as usual up there. Well, I wrote down there on October, no, let's see, that was 1918. I forgot the month. It was winter, though. The storm has gone down a little today. That Arctic storm there, you can't even imagine it. So I said, but it's not quiet enough. We still have to eat off the deck. They pile the food on the deck in big pots, and you help yourself best you could. The other fella didn't get there first. And I said, that's something I don't like. These fellas eat like dogs anyhow. I'd forgotten that. And so, the storm was still bad enough yesterday that when I climbed the Ratlins up to the top to get my foot in the lookout barrel, the storm nearly blew me off. It was so severe.
Yeah.
Things like that I'd long forgotten, but when they're written down in one little page of the little pocket,
yeah,
of the manual, it brings it all back.
What? you had some buddies amongst them.
Oh yes, one's the only one that still survives. They all died off, or I lost track of them. Most of them died.
Well, now you see what you did. You were back there on that ladder, and I didn't know what to say. I wanted to keep you out there on that ladder and with that food on the deck. And I said, my hunch was you had a buddy. All right. You took it clear off the ship and brought it up here amongst the dead people.
He now wanted to see you
now
back.
Now you see I can't get it back.
No, that's the trouble. Well, anyway, I'm afraid I've taken too much of your time. I just wanted to come and tell you that we do appreciate what you're trying to do, both of you, and your helpfulness. And we will cooperate in so far as humanly possible, but at my age, I don't remember as I should, and I'll do what I can. Now, Rick, talk about our visit to the woods there, some of the things he said.
All right. Will you mark them?
Were not accurate.
You mark them.
Will you mark them?
You mark them.
Yes, I mark them, but here's my trouble. One or two pages, I think I'll just leave it the old one the way it was and rewrite it, because he didn't leave space between the lines, and I said, well, if I write it in ink, it runs into the others, it's so hard to read.
Well, just put another sheet of paper there.
Sure.
I'll just use a new sheet, and
sure.
I'll leave the old
sure.
so that the choice can be made.
Sure.
As it seems necessary.
Sure.
And I'll do what I can, but... there's so many things we have to do, we're both shocked that we haven't got it finished yet, but we'll work on it.
It took them 2 months, Mr. Leland, to read them things.
Yes, well, it does take time, that's true. But in revising, I'm trying my best to keep it as near, even if it isn't the way I'd say it, as near as it was written,
well,
but
let
just
me tell
to
you.
Correct something.
Let me tell you, Mr. Leon, you just put on there what's correct, and you
yeah.
don't have to do worry with the other.
I don't want to interfere too much with what the man said,
yeah.
but just
well,
enough to correct.
You don't have to worry about that. You just put on there the facts, and I'll do the rest of it.
Oh, well, that's good, then.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, we'll continue to work on it. The wife put in several hours on hers yesterday.
Oh, good.
And she said that she thought that Debbie did an excellent job.
Just beautiful. And she enjoyed
yeah.
it.
Yeah, she did enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
Debbie enjoyed it.
Did she ever go out to the woods with us? I think it was only Rick. I don't think she ever got a chance to go. She wanted to,
she wanted
I remember,
to.
But I don't think she did. Well, bless you both in what you're trying to do. You're unusual, too, out there at the university.
Well, I think he is. Mr. Neal,
I'm not going with
him.
Huh?
I don't know. Are you coming
late? Oh, no. Let me turn this down. I want to ask you something out there.
Oh, I enjoyed seeing you, Mr. Neal.
Oh,
let me
you
get
know,
it's
one thing that
you mean
we both appreciate so much your goodwill and your...
That's the end of Mr. Neal's pretty long visit this Monday morning, the 18th of February, 74, to tell us he approves of our little pieces on him. And that's a great deal more than I expected. This Monday morning, early, the 18th, or middle of the morning, the 18th of February, 74, and the end of Channel 1, right. The end of Mr. Neeland's visit this frosty Monday morning, the 18th of February, 74.